Welcome to Skin of Color Savvy, the art and science of treating patients of color, the official podcast of the Skin of Color Society. Produced by HCP Live and hosted by SOX leaders, Skin of Color Savvy delves into the latest research, clinical insights, and best practices in dermatology with leading experts. I'm Dr. Crystal Agu, Associate Professor of Dermatology at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, and it is my pleasure today to be joined by my good friend and colleague, Dr. Harris, and I'll give him a chance to introduce himself. But before that, I wanted to introduce the topic for today's episode. We're going to be discussing diversity in clinical trials, as well as an approach to diversity in research in general. So Dr. Harris, could you please introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Crystal. I'm John Harris. I am a dermatologist and physician scientist at UMass Chan Medical School. I'm the department chair there, and I conduct research primarily in vitiligo, a disease that affects all people, but can be more distressing for those with darker skin because of the contrast between the lesions. So it's a topic that I've been thinking about a lot myself.
Great. Well, it's great to have you here. Some of you may know this, but I was the co-chair of the scientific symposium this year. And one of the reasons that I thought Dr. Harris would be an amazing moderator for this panel is because he was actually one of the first recipients of the Skin of Color Society Research Award.
That's true.
And so it's a kind of a full circle moment. So Dr. Harris, why don't you just tell us a little bit about the panel that you moderated, some of the speakers of the panel, and maybe some of the highlights?
Yeah, the panel was a timely one for sure. We were talking about how to incorporate diversity into clinical research, translational research, even basic research came up while we were talking on the panel. The timing was important, I think, because there's been even a call into question whether diversity is important, right? So I think that was one of the things that I didn't really think about starting the panel with is a question, you know, is diversity important, number one? And then why is diversity important? I typically would have started the panel assuming everybody was on the same page. And there have been a lot of challenges to that question, I think, lately. And I think rather than ignore those challenges or pretend they don't exist, we're scientists, we should address them, right? So that was one of my goals was to first try to answer that question. Is it important? Why is it important? And we had a great discussion, actually. You know, I assumed there'd be plenty of the same old answers that we've always thrown out there, but there were some more, and I thought it was great. We had a great panel. We had Valerie Callender and Tamia Harris Tryon and Sean Quatra on the panel, and a great discussion from very diverse perspectives, all the way from basic science to clinical trials.
Yeah, I thought it was so interesting to hear all of your different perspectives, because Dr. Harris Tryon, she's truly a pure basic scientist, whereas you and Dr. Quatra do a lot of mix of basic science and translational work, and Valerie Callender has done so much clinical trial work. And it was interesting, I think, when Dr. Callender mentioned how many patients she sees, right? And she has a list of thousands of patients, and she makes sure all of those patients are involved in clinical trials. What do you think is the importance of having kind of diverse principal investigators in clinical trial work?
Yeah, there were a couple take-home points, I think, from that comment from Valerie. Number one is, you know, shoot, what do we do as younger investigators who don't haven't accumulated that yet, right? And maybe the message is for young investigators to start thinking about this early. And that's the benefit of a physician scientist, that you're bringing patients that you could be involved in your research into clinic, and you can recruit them in a number of different ways. The second thing was the importance of building relationships, I think, and that this really highlighted that. Valerie has great relationships with her patients. They flock to her for many reasons. Her excellence as a clinician, of course, number one. But having diversity in researchers, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. But even my own clinical team, which is actually quite diverse, I've asked them about their input and their perspectives, and they it felt that having diversity all the way through the pipeline, from PI to sub investigators to staff on the clinical on the research team, all helps to build those relationships and give confidence to those that we're recruiting and participating in that research. Having representation, I think, on the team is it can be really, really important. And some of my recruited subjects even commented on that. Now I'm not an example of representing what they were looking for in the clinical team, but my clinical team was. So we have as I said, the people that are recruiting the patients have a wide diversity of languages spoken and skin color and life experiences, and that has really helped our research.
Yeah, it was great seeing the slide that you put up of your entire clinical team and how you even put some of your recruitment information in different languages. I think that that is a rarity and something that would be great to have emulated across the board. Now, a lot of times when I think about discussing diversity and the importance of diversity, I think there, when we're in the room of people who are involved in Skin of Color Society, we're preaching to the choir, right? You don't have to convince anyone in that room that diversity is important. But I think it's important to bring people to the table who maybe don't understand why diversity is so important. And I think about, the benefits of just collaboration in general, right? So when you like, for example, I study CCCA and I've been looking more into the impact of metabolism. And so I asked an endocrinologist to help work on this project, right? And I need that because that person helps me identify my blind spots. What am I missing? And I think that's a perspective that almost anyone can appreciate, right? That you may not be able to see everything that is important to you in your research study. And by adding different perspectives, you just have a better study.
Yeah, that's always the case. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because we often, Skin of Color Society focuses on a specific type of diversity because that's a big part of our mission. But just as scientists, diversity of thought is absolutely critical. Whether it's, not focusing too much on this pathway and ignoring this other pathway, or biasing yourself because of your hypothesis and not thinking of other things, certainly happens in dermatology as well. Having a diverse differential is really important, so you don't miss something important. So I think broadening it to that is really important, which is the same as with you collaborating with somebody who knows metabolism really inside and out, and then helping you bring that into skin. I think that's a good point.
Yeah, it just helps you grow. So, discussing kind of research in general, you mentioned earlier how you felt like this panel was really timely, considering all of the changes that are happening on a federal level. Touch a little bit on how it's just impacting science broadly, and then maybe just a little bit more specifically on, our study of diversity in general and health disparities.
Yeah, as I said, it's starting to call into question, is diversity even important or a focus on that? And I think it's important for us to answer that question, to address it head on and not roll our eyes and pretend it wasn't asked or I think we need to bring people on board, including, the public, the government. We need them, answer their question. It shouldn't if we believe it, it shouldn't be hard to answer the question. So I think we should put some effort into that, importantly. But it is having ripple effects. There are a lot of NIH grants getting canceled because they're focused on unpopular topics, whether it's diversity itself or health equity. And some of those that language use is starting to get flagged in grant applications, even existing ones. And so I think we need to think about how we want to communicate the importance of this work, and do it in an effective way where people will listen.
Yeah. I mean, my bias as an academic dermatologist, there are so few of us in general, right? Is that I wanted this panel to recruit our next generation of researchers. And one of the things that I feel like is so important is sometimes I see medical students or residents and they're in the audience or they're in our clinics and they're like, well, I don't have an MD PhD. So like I could never do research, right? And research is so many different things. And one of the things I tell people is as a physician, you're doing research every day, right? Like if you are seeing an acne patient and you prescribe 10 acne patients azelaic acid and you prescribe another 10 patients benzoyl peroxide, and after a year in the clinics, you're like, you know what? I think benzocline works better at clearing comedonal acne. That is a hypothesis that you are using data that you've collected to generate, right? And a lot of research is just writing down what you've seen and or testing your hypotheses, right? And so as we see more and more patients in year 20, we may say, you know what? I don't use azelaic acid for comedonal acne. I use benzoyl peroxide. And if no one's ever looked at that, which obviously, you know, this is a generic example, then you could be the person that does that. You just write down your observations. And one thing that I think should not be discouraged in this very difficult time of federal regulations or people just asking questions, right? So if you are someone from a group, you're a Native American dermatologist, and you're like, gosh, I'm treating this population, and nobody has picked up on the fact that this condition is so common in my patients. People should feel empowered to do that, right? Because so much of research doesn't necessarily require funding. It just requires a little bit of effort.
Right.
But for the research that does require funding, Skin of Color Society is such a great funding mechanism that isn't subject to federal regulation. So I don't know, you know, how you feel about that, but I think that's one of my goals is just to encourage people that, you know, we are really all researchers.
Yeah, that's a very important point. And Tamia made this point, the point of, diverse questions, even the very beginning of your research, having being from diverse backgrounds brings in different questions that not everybody would necessarily ask. Like you said, the Native American who's asking questions about that specific population because, she's immersed in that population, and the questions come to mind. And so I think there's a great advantage to doing that. I used to ask dermatology resident applicants questions that would kind of dig into this. How good are they at generating a hypothesis? But putting it into clinical context. So, how do you, because we do this every day. How do you approach a patient where you don't have all the information? Either because the information doesn't exist and we're trying to, help a patient, even though they've got a rash we've never seen in our lives and nobody has, or just nobody knows the best treatment for that rash, or any other question that, we live in a world of limited information, and we have to make decisions or we would never prescribe anything or diagnose anything. So just every clinic encounter is generating a hypothesis and then testing it and then gathering data and then revising that hypothesis. So I love
Absolutely.
that perspective. And then just one more thing to throw in there, the use of JAK inhibitors in dermatology is pretty ubiquitous, right? And that
Right.
all began with Brett King throwing tofacitinib at a patient with
Yep.
alopecia areata and psoriasis. And that's how it began. It did not begin, with testing JAK inhibitors in the lab first, then on mice, and then transitioning.
Right.
Brett always says, I knew the literature. I knew the basic science in alopecia areata. His next one was vitiligo. He said, I knew. So, it was a educated hypothesis that JAK inhibitors would
Absolutely.
work because I knew that data. But ultimately that revolution started in the clinic, and everybody can participate in that.
I agree. I've mentioned that as an example too, because it's such a good one. It started from a case report,
That's
a
right.
case report, right? And so just literally a documentation of what you did in clinic. That's it, right? And so you don't have to be in the lab. Now, obviously, so many great discoveries occur there, right? But it's so important. And there aren't federal regulations that are going to stop you from documenting, right? What you see in your patients. And so really, really important takeaways. As we're brainstorming, you know, great examples, what are some examples that you can think of? We talked about this a little bit before we hopped on, but examples that you can think of where lack of diversity maybe impacted treatment options available for patients.
Yeah. I think we need more examples and information and studies, which is why it's so important to be able to conduct these types of studies. We had chatted a little bit about, things that we remember back from medical school, right? So antihypertensives and that some, some categories work in some patients and not in others, and knowing that ahead of time, saves lots of time trying, saves you from wasting time trying the wrong thing. When you could, drill down and maybe use a better one. And you had said your experience with dupilumab, I think, and that's a great example of what we just talked about, right? Just kind of understanding in clinic differences in efficacy across different racial groups. And we didn't know that from the clinical trial, right? Because the clinical trial wasn't diverse enough. I don't know if you want to have a comment on that.
Well, when you were speaking, it made me think of another meeting that both of us were at. It was Montagnan Symposium. And the other thing that is so important is, how we even position race when we look at research, because race is kind of a social construct. And we had, there was a great talk where we discussed that, you could see a disease and maybe you only see it in Black patients. But when you really drill down, all of these Black patients may share an ancestor from Ireland and they're all from the American South. And actually, the race was just kind of a red herring. And the actual thing that connected all of these like small group of patients is that they shared a mutual ancestor.
Interesting.
And it was th those are the types of things that I think are so interesting to think about. And that is an example of maybe some diversity of thought, right? Because that was coming in from anthropologists, right? An anthropologist who gave that talk and was like, hey, by the way that you guys ask questions in dermatology is very interesting. So that came to mind.
Yeah, it's coming up with AI as well. I spoke with an AI company a couple of days ago. We're working to develop algorithms to help diagnose skin disease. And one of the first things I told them is I assume this is on your radar because it's so, obvious, but diagnosis is different in different skin colors. Erythema looks different in dark skin versus light skin, and it's hard enough for dermatologists in person to make that call sometimes, never mind, AI on an image, and it's just something that needs to be considered. I was talking to our CEO of the hospital that I work at UMass Memorial yesterday, and we were talking about AI and kind of how it fails, and I think it can fail in ways that we fail. But he said the classic example from a class he's taking is asking AI to identify a Russian tank versus a US tank. Can you develop an algorithm to help you understand whether, how to fight a conflict? And it got very good very quickly at identifying the two different tanks. But it was, in retrospect, it did terrible when asked in a second cohort because it was identifying snow. He said, if there's a tank and snow around it, that's a Russian tank. And if there's desert around it, based on the images, that's an American tank, and that's useless, right? So we want to think about this in every aspect, whether it's our own eyes or AI eyes, and moving forward. It's kind of fun to think about all these. That's kind of science too, right? Thinking about all the variables that could affect an outcome.
Absolutely. And Dr. Adamson actually gave a great talk on artificial intelligence at the Skin of Color Society Symposium because that's going to be huge. Now,
Right.
before we wrap up, I did want to ask you just a final closing question. Like, what are the things that make you optimistic about the future as it pertains to diversity in research and diversity in clinical trials in general?
Probably the super relevant to this talk is the impact of the Skin of Color Society. So I've been going to the Skin of Color Society since I before I won their one of their first awards, and that I was young at that time, maybe 17 years ago. And it was a much smaller venue, a much shorter meeting, and many fewer speakers. So the transformation that's happened, the interest in skin of color as a society, it's just grown so much. And now I have so many colleagues, and I get to expand that friend circle by so much because there's just really so much engagement. And that's going to translate into diverse questions and diverse research and outcomes and better for patients. It's a great privilege to be a part of that.
Yeah, I was going to say the same. I think just watching Skin of Color Society grow, the number of funding mechanisms, the different, researchers every year that are awarded, and you're just seeing the impact grow and grow because so many of our diseases, as you mentioned, vitiligo, my disease of interest, CCCA, I mean, 20 years ago, what was known about these diseases, right? These are both diseases that
Right.
disproportionately impact people with pigmented skin types. And for that reason, there wasn't a lot known about it. And then you look today and you're like, oh my gosh, wow, so much work is being done. And I think that Skin of Color Society has really been at the forefront of so much of that, right? If you're the work you're doing in vitiligo has been transformational, and one of your first, supporters was Skin of Color Society, and the same for me. And so just seeing, I think, the organization grow has truly been so inspiring.
Yeah, seeing that room full of our future colleagues was great.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, thank you so much for this engaging and insightful conversation. This wraps up this episode of Skin of Color Savvy. Dr. Harris, thank you so much for your time. We hope that you found today's discussion informative and inspiring. If you're interested in learning more about the Skin of Color Society and its impactful work, I encourage you to visit skinofcolorsociety.org. Please don't forget to subscribe to HCP Live's newsletters and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest in dermatology and more. We'll be back soon with another episode, so be sure to subscribe to Skin of Color Savvy on your favorite podcast platform. Until next time, take care and thank you for listening.
Thank you. Happy to be here.